those who lose power scream loudly.
Flip the House, flip the Senate, flip the presidency, and restore the courts.
What an upset. What an incredible moment this is.
Hi, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode, the Miracle on Ice turns 40. The New York State budget is due in 6 weeks, and Senator Ed Markey and Congressman Joe Kennedy debate for the first time. Well, another issue outside of the budget is getting most of the attention at the New York State Capitol. Under criticism from law enforcement and many Republican elected officials, Democrats who control the state Senate have been discussing changes to the new bail law that took effect on New Year's Day. But Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie has been reticent to change the law so soon. Our Alan Chartok asked New York Governor Andrew Cuomo for an update.
There are many people who think bail reform could lead to Democratic losses. I know that you've said it had to be tweaked. And we know Speaker Hastie is against that, thinks it's too early. Where are we at in that one?
Speaker Hastie can speak for himself. That's why they call him Speaker. But he said, I want to make a decision based on data, which is the same thing I said. You know, you have a lot of rhetoric. You have a lot of hyperbole. When you go back and you look at a lot of these hysterical fact patterns that have been raised, many of them just don't pan out. You know, many of the statements that were made, people are now recanting. Some of the situations where they said, look at this, look what happened here. It turned out it had nothing to do with bail reform. So I get that people are offended. I get that there has been a shift in power in the system. And whenever there's a shift in power, Alan, those who lose power scream loudly. And this was a major reform and a much needed reform to get money out of the justice equation. But now you have to separate the politics and the personal agendas and the misinformation from the actual facts. And that's what we're talking through now. And I think we're doing it deliberately and intelligently. And nobody will say, I don't think the speaker included, nobody's going to say, well, we made one change and we don't expect that that change is going to have other consequences that we have to consider. So I think everybody is looking and learning and listening. The Senate said basically that they put forth a series of changes they think should be made, and we'll be discussing those. But the speaker is open to the discussion, and that's what we'll be doing, and I think we'll do it for the next several weeks. And then make a decision based on the facts.
So are you feuding with my friend Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller, who's released his analysis of your budget last week? He says more than a third of the proposal plans to close the budget gap have yet to be identified. In other words, you haven't told him how you're going to do it. Is he right?
First, I'm not even familiar with what the comptroller said.
Okay.
By definition, he would have to be right, because the Medicaid redesign team, MRT, is the vehicle to identify the savings, and he knows that that doesn't come forward until we get closer to April.
Massachusetts U.S. Senator Ed Markey and his Democratic primary challenger, Congressman Joe Kennedy, sparred on several topics during their first broadcast debate. WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuthill reports.
Markey used much of the hour-long debate to highlight his longstanding support for progressive causes, repeatedly mentioning his co-sponsorship of the Green New Deal and pointing to his authorship of legislation to fund gun violence research and to protect the environment by doubling the fuel economy standards.
I've been leading and delivering fossil fuel industry. I beat them. The gun lobby, I beat him just in December. Beat him. The law is on the books.
While agreeing broadly with Markey on many issues, including the Green New Deal and moving toward a single-payer health care system, Kennedy argued he would be the better one to represent Massachusetts in the Senate.
This is not about filing the right bill and voting the right way. We have to do everything you can to restore power to a Democratic Party across the entire country, flip the House, flip the Senate, flip the presidency, and restore the courts. And that, I think, is a type of leadership that I can bring to the seat, and I think that's what Massachusetts deserves.
Markey, who is 73, has served in Washington for decades, first in the House and since 2013 in the Senate. Kennedy, who's 39, is a four-term representative from the state's 4th congressional district and a member of one of the country's most storied political dynasties. This was their first debate since Kennedy announced last September that he would try to unseat Markey. It was broadcast from the studios of WGBH in Boston and heard live here on WAMC. Money in politics was a topic during the debate. Kennedy was questioned about his investments worth a reported $2 million in fossil fuel companies.
There is not a single vote that anybody can point to that shows that investment holdings that have been long held have influenced my vote once. You look at my record of taking on fossil fuel companies, it is as strong as anyone's in Congress. And the idea that those holdings have influenced my vote at all, you can't find it.
Markey was on the defensive over his refusal to sign a so-called People's Pledge to discourage outside groups from buying ads to try to influence voters. He's proposed a watered-down plan that would allow some third-party participation.
I've introduced a progressive People's Pledge for 2020 so that we deal with the era of Donald Trump. Yeah, we should have a pledge that keeps out dark money, that keeps out negative voices, but we should welcome positive voices.
What's the matter with that, Congressman?
That is an exception that swallows the rule. Look, what we have asked is, it was good enough for Senator Markey back in 2013. It was good enough in 2014 when he championed it, when Massachusetts set the standard for keeping dark money out. It's the same pledge now.
At the start of the year, Markey had about $4.5 million in his campaign account. Kennedy had $5.5 million. Both Markey and Kennedy decried President Donald Trump's immigration policies. Markey said Democrats should file lawsuits to challenge Trump.
We have to take them to court. We have to stop them in court. We have to introduce legislation so that we debate it on the floor of the House and Senate, try to move it as far as we can, as fast as we can, to let him know that he's accountable.
Kennedy, who recounted how he spent Father's Day on the U.S.-Mexico border to witness how Trump policies are playing out, said negotiations with Republicans about immigration have been to no avail.
You cannot negotiate with a ghost. You cannot. You are anticipating that the president says, this is the deal, take it or leave it. Every time we engage in those conversations, he changes his mind. Every time.
Two votes by Markey on foreign policy drew criticism from Kennedy, a vote on the House floor in 2002 to authorize the use of military force in Iraq, and a 2013 committee vote as a senator on the use of military force in Syria. On the latter, Markey voted present. He was one of just 81 House Democrats to support the Iraq War resolution.
George Bush lied. Donald Rumsfeld lied, Dick Cheney lied to the American people about the presence of nuclear weapons in Iraq. It was a false pretense to start a war. I'm still angry about that lie to the American people. I regret that vote. It was a mistake.
The lesson of Iraq, one of many, is that you do not go into another Middle Eastern country without knowing how you get out. And when confronted with that question, roughly 10 years after that vote, the senator voted present. Not no, not yes, on a matter of war and peace, but present. And I think that record speaks for itself.
Markey touted endorsements from several anti-war groups. The candidates have agreed to participate in two more broadcast debates before the September 1st primary. The next one is on March 18th in Springfield. Reporting from WAMC's Pioneer Valley News Bureau on the campus of Western New England University, I'm Paul Tuthill.
And Saturday is the 40th anniversary of one of the biggest upsets in sports history. And it all happened in upstate New York.
Still lose 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. You believe in miracles? Yes!
By now, sports fans know Al Michaels' call by heart. But the Olympic men's hockey medal round game on February 22, 1980 actually wasn't seen by the vast majority of Americans in real time unless you had a ticket. The game between the U.S. and the Soviet Union was shown on tape delay on ABC, and in the pre-cell phone age, it was possible to keep the stunning result secret. But the scoreboard in what's now Herb Brooks Arena, named for the Americans' demanding coach, said it all. The U.S. scored twice in the first period and twice more in the third to win the game 4-3 and attain sports immortality.
This was an upset. This was a gigantic, gigantic upset. And so that's why the word miraculous came into my brain. And I said what I said, but that had everything to do with what an upset, what an incredible moment this is, and not, you know, not something that I ever thought would live in posterity.
Team captain Mike Arruzzioni scored the go-ahead goal.
For some, it was a hockey victory, and for some, it was a political needing something as a country for a shot in the arm. And I think realizing what we did 40 years ago, I guess we brought a lot of pride back to a country that was looking for something, and it happened to be us.
The U.S. went on to beat Finland 4-2 2 days later to win the gold medal after Brooks told the Americans they would take it to their grave if they didn't win the whole thing. Today, the miracle on ice is remembered as an important moment in the Cold War, its meaning mythologized to the extent that when the arena finally replaced the scoreboard in 2017, pieces from the old one from that iconic Friday evening were already being claimed. Left-wing Buzz Schneider came back to the arena for the decommissioning.
It's part of history, and it's going to be gone. But I can understand why they're doing it and stuff. But it'll be missed by me for sure. But I want to touch that 4-3 before I see it disappear.
Made into countless documentaries, two feature films, and ranked as the top Sports Illustrated cover of all time, the game's details have become familiar even for people too young to remember it. How the college athletes banded together under Brooks' hard-driving approach, how they rebounded from a 10-3 exhibition loss to the Russians just before the games, and how they never gave up against them despite trailing three times. The Russian team was heavily favored after winning four straight Olympic gold medals. Michaels said ABC was just hoping to have the Americans within two goals in the third period to keep viewers. An outright victory seemed out of the question.
You know, exactly 10 minutes ago, whoa, you know, holy mackerel, is this possible? And then at that point, the crowd is just going out of its mind.
For Arruzzioni, who's been talking about that week in Lake Placid for four decades, the lesson is simple.
You believe in miracles. You believe in working hard. You believe in sacrifice. Anything can happen.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.